Welcome back to the MLL podcast. My name is Kyle Devitt, and I am the Gear and Lifestyle Editor at Inside the Cross, and I am joined, as always, by IL MLL writer Chris Rosenthal. Chris, man, the regular season is over. What is good?
You know what time it is? Playoffs.
Playoffs?
The words of the great Jim Mora. That's right.
Playoffs? Oh, man, we're so old because we remember that, even though it happened when we were kids. All right, we're going to start off, like we start off every podcast, with the weekend recap. We're starting out with the Boston Cannons 23, the Ohio Machine 14. The Cannons dominated this game start to finish with their best performance of the season. At one point, Boston attackman Mark Cockerton had the same amount of goals as the entire Machine team. With 8. For Ohio, it seemed like they saw the writing on the wall and played like the first round pick was the only thing they cared about. And the L here has delivered that to them. Chris, what'd you make of this game?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Cannons led 14-3 at halftime. So, yeah, it was pretty much over as soon as it started. And, the thing about Cockerton is, I'm sure you remember, of course, he's the star of this game with his 8 goals. I think it's a good time to remind everybody that he was traded from Ohio to Boston earlier this season. Also, I think a good time to remind everybody that they threw in a 7th-round pick to sweeten the deal. Like, it wasn't even a straight-up Cockerton for MLA deal. They had to add a pick to, I guess, convince Boston to pull the trigger. I don't know how trades work half the time in this league, because MLO wanted out, so you think he has no leverage, but they gave a 7th-round pick anyway. And third, good time to remind everybody that Mark Cockerton was drafted at the end of the 7th round back in the 2014 draft. He is perpetually disrespected, and maybe next season people will finally give him some props.
Yeah, off-ball shooter. Off-ball shooter, doing things, getting into spots, making things happen. You know what's funny about him? He carried so much for Team Canada at Worlds that I was, like, blown away. I was like, what are you doing? That's weird. You don't do that in the MLL. That's strange. So he's more multifaceted than even we are giving him credit for. One other guy I want to talk about here, Trevor Baptiste, 30 faceoff wins, 20 ground balls, had a bunch of shots, didn't convert any. But this is the game that I think people expected from Baptiste game in and game out. Do you think it's indicative of things to come? Or did he just put it all together against a team that was, you know, by all accounts, tapped out?
I think it's somewhere in the middle, somewhere in between those two options. I do think he will be better next season than he was for the majority of this season while he was playing. And, you know, he kind of towards the tail end of the summer kind of, you know, got much better. His numbers got higher, you know, was successful over in Israel, much better than, you know, when he started off and was kind of hanging around in the 40s vintage wise. That being said, I do also think that Ohio, you know, I mean, they trotted out, they benched or, you know, were unable to call up their traditional starting faceoff guys, you know, so they introduced somebody new who, you know, maybe he won't be there next season. You know, they're trying somebody new out there. They're trying out a lot of things, set a bunch of guys.
Andrew Barcy from Norwich.
Yes, there we go.
Which is a team I don't like from my time at Clark and my time as a coach. I like the head coach, but I don't like traveling to play that team. So, but Andrew Barcy, shout to you. D3 Life, making it in the leagues. Continue.
Yes. So, I mean, we will see if this carries over to, you know, I mean, I don't know how we weigh this as dominance. You know, is it a universal sort of dominance? Like, can we expect him to be, you know, 70% next season if he's going against Drew Simoes or Tom Kelly's of the world? I don't know. You know, we're going to have to see where Baptiste stacks up relative to everybody else, because that's the really, really, really strong defining factor when it comes to a face-off guy. It's not, you know, a really good day or a really good 2 days. You got to compete against the other guys before you really know. So we'll see. But it is definitely encouraging for him, much like Boston as a whole. You know, winning this game, you know, their past couple of victories certainly sends them off on a good foot.
I agree 100%. One more thing in this game. Justin Gutterding, 4 goals, 1 assist. Not really being talked about in the Rookie of the Year conversation, but I think he's got a shout. I think he, once again, the king of the underrated attackmen, put it all together for this late run for the Machine team. He just had no support, so I just wanted to give a shout-out to him. Great job, and, you know, making the most out of people underestimating him game in and game out at every level. So shout-out to Gutterding. All right, our next game, the New York Lizards 18, the Chesapeake Bayhawks 11. You know, after Stephen Kelly, the Bayhawks faceoff man, went down, all hope for a comeback was really lost for the Bayhawks here. If anything, I feel like this game was a harbinger of all things that Chesapeake should be wary of in the playoffs. You know, they messed up things that they traditionally do not mess up. They had some pretty rough turnovers where they should have had goals. For New York, they rode the wave of RP3's goal-scoring ability and also their great execution in transition. I think the key for them is that Jake Bernhardt finally knows what he has to do on this team and that it's very different from what he did for Ohio. And that's a turning point for New York because that's a good player who's finally put it together for you, and that's going to be scary going into the playoffs facing Dallas this weekend. What did you make of New York's victory over Chesapeake?
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely agree with you about Bernhardt. You know, your identity is so much, such a direct connection to your success. It's not so much about being, you know, really good or, you know, whatever. Because, I mean, you know, Bernhardt, we've seen him do a lot of things well, but it's all about what he's needed to do at that time. And so, yeah, in this game in particular, I noticed at one point he was covering Steele Stanley, which really kind of freed up defense options elsewhere. You know, because you don't have to use a pole on him if you can send a midfielder down there. The Stephen Kelly thing is very bad and obviously at a very unfortunate time. And you know, you really can't overstate the potential repercussions if the Bayhawks have to throw together some sort of skeleton crew kind of to handle faceoffs going forward. Because I mean, there are no easy faceoff matchups in the final four here: Adler, Simino, and Kelly. So I mean, that's going to be a huge question mark for Chesapeake. I thought watching this game, I kind of felt like both teams were playing like the game didn't matter. And don't mean that necessarily is a bad thing, because, like, you know, when you're playing a game that doesn't count, you're usually, you know, like if you're successful doing it, you're a lot more relaxed. You know, I mean, the Lizards' ball movement looked really good. They were tossing around behind the back passes, making a lot of extra passes, you know, quick stick, one-timers, all over the place kinds of things. Like, they were playing like there was no pressure on them whatsoever. And Chesapeake kind of played like the bad way to look at, you know, the statement that they're playing like it didn't count. A lot of their shots, the shot selection wasn't something you're used to seeing from the Bayhawks. It just didn't look as crisp as you're used to seeing Chesapeake doing successfully. They did have moments where they looked incredible. You know, Lyle Thompson had some incredible plays. Josh Byrne was on the receiving end of one of those passes. They looked very good at times, but there were some other times, especially with things like shot selection, that we're just used to seeing them do better. So you have to hope, if you're a Bayhawks fan, that they can kind of flip the switch or kind of secure things moving forward.
I don't want to hit a panic button, but I'm going to hit a panic button if you're a Bayhawks fan. The Bayhawks, as a team, have taken 394 total faceoffs. Stephen Kelly has taken 361 of those faceoffs.
Yikes.
The only other guys that have taken draws for them that are still on the team are Costabile and Sean Mayall, who came in just to spell Kelly at different points in the season. So there's no backup. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? To me, it's the biggest storyline of the semifinals. But I do want to talk about New York a little bit more. We talked last week about New York's defense improving. I mean, you're holding the Bayhawks to 11. That's a team with several members of world teams and medal-winning teams in the World Games. You know, the Lizards stopped, or at least limited, guys like Lyle Thompson, you know, 3 goals, 2 assists, but he took 12 shots. You know, you've got Matt Donowski blanked in this game. Colin Heacock blanked in this game. That's no accident. That's great play by a defense that had a game plan going in and executed on and off ball. I mean, I think the Lizards definitely took advantage of quick saves by Adams getting out and outletted to streaking midfielders and long poles. But I also think that, you know, they did a great job in the six, you know, for what it's worth. I really think that it's one of their more impressive defensive feats that I've seen a team accomplish all season. So I definitely want to give props for that. What did you make of the kind of new look Lizards defense there?
Yeah, and I definitely agree. It's been a sort of constant evolution by those guys. They kept a lot of Chesapeake's deadly weapons quiet for a substantial portion of the game. Miles Jones was very, very quiet for most of the game. Kind of came back later in the fourth quarter with a few assists to make the stat line look better. But in, you know, throughout the early portion of the game, that sort of midfield production was something that the Lizards had, you know, successfully addressed. It's it bodes very well for the Lizards moving forward that they've been able to keep improving. You know, even without their face-off situation obviously being the huge question mark, you know, Chesapeake kind of stumbling across the finish line like this, even though they had clinched, you know, you never want to see your team kind of, you know, stumble across the finish line like this.
Absolutely. Our next game is the Denver Outlaws 15, the Atlanta Blaze 14. It was winner get in for both teams. And Denver won. It's a heartbreaker for Atlanta. I think the Outlaws earned their comeback by swinging the momentum with early offense and incredible ball movement, kind of their trademark all season. I don't think there's anyone scarier on the break than Denver. They always look for the extra pass, and it leads to basically what amounts to open net goals for guys like Eric Law and Matt Cavanaugh on either side of the cage. What did you make of this contest?
So, you know, Atlanta came in just hottest team in the league, and you know, they started off strong right out the gate, but then the Outlaws just kind of took the punches and eventually went on a run of their own. 8-goal run for the Outlaws, scored 9 out of 10 goals at one point. I think largely what it comes down to, just looking at the two teams, you know, you got the Outlaws, been to the postseason 12 times in 13 seasons, and they just kind of demonstrated that kind of composure that gets you there. You know, I mean, they're used to adversity. You know, nobody on that team was going to fold when it looked like Atlanta was just kind of, you know, systematically taking them apart. And, you know, any sort of complications that they might face with the weather delay that they had to deal with is, again, something that Denver is used to doing and has a positive recollection of it. You know, if a storm blows through, Denver's, you know, they're all going to sit together and say, you know, this is probably a good sign for us. You know, any sort of intangible thing that can help out your squad. So, I mean, that sort of thing probably even helped them a little bit. But, you know, all in all, a lot of positive things to take away if you're the Blaze. But, you know, the end itself, just, I mean, absolute heartbreaker. Just a few inches from tying it all up. You know, Connor Kelly's almost 2-pointer could have done it. You know, I mean, had a couple opportunities. Yeah. You know,
Nardella won the draw with like 11 seconds left, and just an ill-advised shovel pass that just didn't get through. You know, I mean, yeah. It's crazy. It's one bounce, and you're out. Any other things jump out at you here?
No, not really. I mean, it's just. If you are the Blaze, a lot of what we've been saying earlier this season about them, young performers really stepping up for them. So, you know, heading into the offseason, you have to feel good. You know, you're looking at guys like Connor Kelly, you know, Christian Cuccinello, a lot of guys who you hope pan out have done very, very well. So, you know, if they make the leap next year, Atlanta's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, really scary how well they've done in the draft last couple of years. All right, we're going to move on to our last game of the regular season. The Dallas Rattlers 14, the Florida Launch 13. For a game that very few people watched, as it had zero playoff implications, this had quite the ending. A two-bomb from Ned Crotty to win it on the possible, nay, probable goalie of the year in Austin Kaut? Like, what happened here? What happened? Seriously, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't get it. What happened?
How often do we actually see this in lacrosse? I mean, it was like a Steph Curry three-pointer or something. I mean, you never actually see, like, two-pointers to win the game. You know, as time is, I mean, very, very late in the game, we're just not used to seeing that sort of thing. Just incredible. Incredible that it actually happened. Again, it's kind of like the last game. You know, Dallas has just been killing people this season. So, you know, yeah, you're going to get some of these that aren't, you know, classical, typical wins. And also, just like the last game, Florida came out and they were just destroying Dallas, just picking them apart. It looked like the Rattlers were just going to get steamrolled, and then they just took the punches and then they came back and won. It seems like the veteran, kind of old school, successful, traditional powerhouses have a knack for figuring it out and not folding. As far as that two-pointer went, you kind of have it. It looks like, I don't know if Connor Busick was supposed to be covering Ned Crotty or not. He kind of looked like maybe somebody else was supposed to be. So he kind of got caught looking around, seeing who was supposed to, you know, who was supposed to pick up who. But I do want to say it's definitely not his fault that they lost, because he had, you know, 3 goals, 2 assists and was an absolute monster for the other 99% of the game. And one other thing about Connor Busick, I don't know if you've noticed this, the past couple of games, have you noticed he just keeps flattening people?
Yeah, I think it's like his favorite thing to do.
He's just putting everybody on the ground. And again, something you don't see traditionally in, you know, obviously, lacrosse, we watch lacrosse, we've seen people on slides, you know, get leveled and stuff like that. But, you know, especially in the higher level, it doesn't happen that often. But Connor Busick is just putting people on their backs left and right. Just he has a streak going of like at least 3 games where he's just leveling somebody. It's been insane to watch.
Maybe he just got jealous of all those Max Seabold leveling dudes for Team Israel clips that made it over from Worlds. Just wanted to reenact them all.
Maybe.
Just my thought. I think it's a little surprising going back and looking at this game and seeing how the Rattlers won, because it's a little scary because a ton of guys scored goals. You know, it's like 8 guys with a goal, at least 1 goal. How do you game plan that? How do you stop that? How do you defend that? You know, that's a question that the Lizards are going to ask themselves when they go in to the Star and play the Dallas Rattlers in the first semifinal of the MLL playoffs this weekend. And to get you guys ready for that, we have 2 special guests. But first, we're going to talk to the probable MVP of the league, RP3 himself, Rob Pinnell, right now. We'd like to welcome to the podcast New York Lizards and Team USA gold medal winning attackman, Rob Pinnell. Rob, what's going on, man?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me. Excited to be on.
Yeah, it's going great. We're just getting ready for the playoffs. We thought we'd bring in who we both think is the incumbent MVP, maybe also Offensive Player of the Year, but we can get to that. I'm going to go first. I think there's been a concerted effort on your part to showcase your fitness both in season and going into the season. How has your approach changed for 2018, and what did you do differently going into the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen some of stuff and talking about me having my shirt off quite a bit. But that's why you work out, right? So you can take your shirt off. No, I think I realized, you know, over my career how important fitness has been to my success. And I guess, you know, as a struggling lacrosse player growing up and not being recruited that much and not being always, you know, successful on the field. I've seen fitness as the one thing that's allowed me to take my game to that next level year in, year out. And I think this year, more than any other year, I've really kind of put that emphasis on it. And, you know, one of my friends in the city, Brian, is a big fitness guy. And we just started working out together and trying different things. And we kind of found this workout plan that would work. And it was a combination of strength, but also cardio and keeping yourself moving and kind of no breaks, just keeping it going and throughout the workout for about 30, 35, 40 minutes. And I felt greater than I've ever felt before. And it kind of started to get noticed by some guys, and they started doing the workouts and loving them and whatnot. And then it started to get noticed by some people in the media as well. And listen, I enjoy fitness. I'm very passionate about it. It's something that I love to do. So for me to be able to put more emphasis on that and to help me on the lacrosse field is the best of both worlds.
Now, so in addition to kind of ramping up your fitness game, there's been an increase in your scoring. Obviously, last season was good as well, but this season you set the scoring record again. What was the difference in feeling between breaking somebody else's scoring record and breaking your own record this season? And, like, second part to that, were you aware of your point total during the game? Like, did you know, next goal sets the record, so here comes something dope?
So I guess for the first question, as far as breaking your own record versus someone else, I guess there's just a little less pressure. You're not thinking about it as much. You know, as much as players want to say that, you know, they don't really care about that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're, you know, listen, we're all playing to win and get that next game. And this weekend's game was certainly about winning and making it to the playoffs, you know, no doubt about it. But I'd be lying the record as well, but I guess when I had it already, I didn't feel that much pressure because, you know, everyone wants to have records and break records, and it's just a matter of, you know, if you're in the you know, spot to do so. So I think I didn't feel as much pressure as I did, let's say, the first time around. The first time around was really interesting too, because Paul and I were both chasing his record, and we both broke it the same game, and it was just a matter of who, you know, I had more points that game, and I think we were pretty even. So, and we were very close that year. So it was cool. I don't think there was as much pressure as that first time around to kind of do it and get there. And then for the second part, which was, yes, I was aware of it. You know, all my other teammates were talking about it, and, you know, going to that last huddle, we were man up. And we kind of brought it in, and I was like, all right, let's just get this over with already so we can play the rest of the game. And everyone kind of laughed, and sure enough, Joe Wall, like, kind of recognized it when we were talking about it, and he gave me that one more cross crease, and it happened. So everyone was aware of it, and, you know, everyone was happy and excited for me as well. Yeah, we all know how hard these guys, you know, work and how hard I work, so everyone was just excited to have it happen, and then more importantly, we were winning the game by a good amount and looking at the playoffs.
One of the things you focused on is creating a much stronger presence across social media, and you even recently launched a YouTube channel. What inspired that move, and what sort of challenges have you found in kind of pursuing, you know, a larger media presence?
Yeah, I think this off season, it's tough as a lacrosse player, obviously, where some guys are full time, some guys aren't, and this off season, I really hit like a point where I was like, okay, do I want to go and look for a job where I'm, you know, working Monday through Friday and on the weekends to play lacrosse, or do I really want to commit to being a professional lacrosse player and go all in? And I kind of made that decision that lacrosse was what I was most passionate about at this point. It's what I love, and it's what I've spent 20 years doing. So to just give it up like that and go into something else, I wasn't ready to do. So I committed. I said, I'm going to commit all in a YouTube channel. I'm going to really ramp it up on Instagram and, you know, started a podcast. So I think I made that decision because I was at a kind of a fork in the road to go one way or the other. And I just said, I'm going to go all in and commit to lacrosse and see what happens in the next few years and how I could build my brand. And That's kind of where I was at. And I think it's been interesting to navigate that space and see the, I think the most difficult thing with any of it is being consistent, right? Like, you guys are putting out this podcast once a week, and I had 3 weeks of my podcast, and then I was over in Israel, and we haven't done one for 3 weeks now. And I think part of building that brand and being able to actually create and bring value to people is to be consistent with that. And it was the same thing with YouTube. Over to Israel, took a break, and now back at it this week. So the biggest struggle is being consistent with anything. And I think when I found how I found success in lacrosse is being able to have a consistent work ethic and being able to train consistently and eat the right way consistently, whatever it is. And I need to have that same consistency over in that social media presence, whichever media type it is. So that's the most challenging aspect of it. And I think that's the most challenging part that a lot of people have is being able to be consistent with it. Because I think as a whole, kids out there and young players and people in general want that consistency, and they want to have something to look to on a week by week basis.
So now back to talking about on-field play for a minute, you've got a pretty distinctive style to your game. Like, you know, it's pretty recognizable the way that, you know, you dodge, you drive from X. Like, who do you think has influenced you the most when it comes to like putting together your games, right? Dodging from X, quarterbacking offense, you know, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'd have to say it probably dated back to my Cornell days when I was primarily a feeder in my first, you know, my freshman year and sophomore year. And Coach Tambrodi and Coach Saluka kind of really stressed that I need to be a dual threat and I need to get to the goal. So whether it was, you know, putting two guys on me during practice in 6-on-6 on me and a guy off and, just kind of setting the, you know, taking it to that next level and setting the bar high. They really kind of said, I need to make that happen and bring that to my game. So to try and, you know, be the best dodger that I can, it was no longer about me just dodging to feed. It was dodging to get to the goal. And then I tried to create the best combination of the two. So I would say those two guys, you know, Coach Tambrodi being an attackman himself and then Coach DeLuca being the defensive coach and always throwing a challenge out there to me, they really pushed me to that next level as an attackman and to really bring my game full circle to what it is today.
Now, I'm the gear editor at IL. It's my official title, so I already know the answer to this, but what stick do you use and who strings it?
Well, a machine strings it. I'm using the Evo Warp right now. It's custom to me. So, you know, I know there's a lot out there about the Warp and this and that. I'm excited to say, and I think it's happening, that we're going to be coming out with my version that I am using right now for people to use. So it's obviously a lot different than the one that you're going to buy in stores, but it's not that different. It's a great stick. And it's all black, obviously, and then I'm using the BLT shaft, which is the Burn Light, and it's kind of like a carbon fiber shaft on that Warp. And I've gone back between that and the Evo Diamond this year, but both are great shafts. So I found a lot of success with it, and it's just nice to know that I have a couple of them that are going to be the same, and it's worked for me this year.
What is the last great movie you saw, and what's the worst movie you've seen?
The last great movie I saw. That's a great question. I'm a big fan of The Greatest Showman, which I'm not really musical at all, but I saw that, and it was very entertaining, and obviously tells the story of P.T. Barnum Bailey in the circus, and I enjoyed it very much. I also recently saw the movie about the girl who runs the card game. What was it called?
Molly's Game.
I watched on a flight. Molly's Game. That was great as well. I watched that on a flight. I think I watched both of those movies on the same flight. So they were very entertaining. Now, my least favorite movie of all time is Edward Scissorhands. I'm completely petrified of Edward Scissorhands. And can't watch that movie. It just scares me. So
I have a similar experience with Donnie Darko. So I feel you.
Yes. Understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. So who is your favorite team sports athlete and who is your favorite individual sports athlete?
Team sport. My favorite team sports athlete these days, I'd say, is probably, I'm a big Russell Wilson fan. You know, I'm a Cowboys fan, but I'm not a Seahawks fan, but I do love Russell Wilson. I think he's extremely talented. My favorite individual sports athlete these days, probably Ricky Fowler. You know, I've always been a big Tiger Woods fan, but Ricky Fowler certainly is one of my favorites in the team sport, in the individual sports these days. And I'm a big golfer, so definitely a golfer that would take that.
And finally, where can people follow you on social media and give us a song for our summer MLL playlist?
All right. Social media can be found at RobPinnell3 on Instagram and Twitter, and then YouTube/RobPinnell3 for my new YouTube channel. And my new song, I've been on kind of a Kygo hit these days, so maybe Stargazing Kygo. I just kind of put – I'm in the This is Kygo Spotify playlist. That's kind of been my go-to these days, and Stargazing is one of my favorites, so – that's that. I'm not a big music guy.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. Good luck this weekend with the Zards down in Dallas. So if you're a Cowboys fan, I think you'll be having fun down there, right?
I will. It was pretty cool playing there a few weeks ago, and I'm excited to be back down there. So just got to see whose jersey I'm going to rock this time.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Rob.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the support, as always.
Thanks, sir.
So, The Greatest Showman is not what I expected.
No, not at all. No. I full disclosure, I have not seen The Greatest Showman. So, I mean, I'm not going to automatically say that that's like, you know, wow, that's a wrong sort of answer or something like that. I was just totally surprised because, like, I haven't seen it. And I also didn't know very many people did. It was kind of in and out of the theaters pretty quickly. But I mean, you know, if you're looking for a DVD or a Blu-ray hit or something like that, maybe The Greatest Showman, if Rob Pinnell is to be believed, it's legit and you should check it out.
I mean, it's a true test of the Rob Pinnell fandom. If you're going to go out and take that recommendation, I did see I didn't see that either. I saw Molly's Game. Molly's Game is good. So I would definitely see that. I will back him on that. I can't join with the Greatest Showman. I can't give that an endorsement, but I'm not Rob Pinnell. So if you're in that camp, go grab it. If you're in the Shirt Off camp, go grab it. All right. We're going to go into our recommendation of the week before we bring on our two extra special guests to help us preview the semifinals. My recommendation of the week, not a lot of surprises here for me. The Lake Placid Lacrosse Tournament is my recommendation for every lacrosse fan of every age, every player, any ability level. Just find a way once in your life and go. I wasn't going to go this year. I was out. I just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. I got a text 3 weeks in, new team. Hey, can you play? And I thought about it and I was like, yeah, I'm going to play. Yeah, I'm going to go. Because it's not just the camaraderie. It's not just the experience. It's everything around you. You know, you it's a very inclusive atmosphere. No one's like talking down to you. There's no real elitism unless you get into like some deep conversations with people you probably don't want to talk to anyway. Because elitism in lacrosse is literally everywhere.
Sure.
But I think that it's a bucket list for a lacrosse player of any ability. You can do it. Train. Every team needs D-middies, fam. Just be an athlete and go play D-middy and get off. You know, it's worth it. It's worth it to have that experience. It's worth it to be in it. You know, last year I wrote something for Inside the Cross that a couple people reposted going into the tournament and afterwards. And I can't write another thing because I'm never going to top what I wrote last year, so I'm not going to try, but I'm going to recommend that you go. That's the best thing I can do is recommend that somehow, some way. You're listening to this, you're like 10 years old. Remember, find a way. Find a way. Just find a way to play, find a way to go. It's an amazing experience, lots of fun. Chris, what is your recommendation?
Well, so first of all, I will definitely co-sign on the Lake Placid Lacrosse Tournament being a tournament that everybody should find a way to get to at least once, because at the very least, it's a gorgeous place to play lacrosse. But my recommendation is HBO Sunday Night Television. So obviously, there's no Westworld right now, and Game of Thrones is off until 2038 or whenever that finally comes back. So if you are looking for something to watch, I'm going to say don't give up on HBO because they trotted out some new stuff. That being said, one of the shows is actually over for the season, but if you haven't watched it yet, then you're in luck. You can just watch it now, and it won't matter either way. That's Succession.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Are you on to Succession?
I'm way behind, but I'm like four eps in, and I'm in. I'm all the way in. I'm hooked.
Excellent. The way I had to describe it to my brother, who was asking if he should watch it, is I was like, if the family from the Royal Tenenbaums, all of their kids were Stiller character, that would be Succession. Like, they're all money hungry, power hungry, obsessed. Are they good people? Maybe not. Are any of them good people? Who knows? I don't know. It's drama and it's tension and it's comedy, and you should check that out as well. The second show, I think, comes on right after, I think. It's called Sharp Objects. It's Amy Adams. It's kind of like a small town murder mystery. I think it's a mystery. Maybe it's not for us to try to figure out the mystery. Maybe they're just going to tell us, like a drama. I don't know. All I know is there's a killer in a small town. Nobody knows who it is. And it's pretty heavy. So if you are a 10-year-old, don't watch it. But you shouldn't be watching any of this stuff if you're a 10-year-old.
Yeah, definitely don't do that.
Yeah, don't watch any of this HBO stuff if you're 10. But also, added bonus, the main character, Amy Adams, she listens to a lot of music. And I don't know how they did it, but HBO's got some deep pockets because they got the rights to a ton of Zeppelin songs.
Yeah.
So if you like small town murder mysteries, if you like that whole sort of thing, if you like Zeppelin music, check out Sharp Objects as well. So HBO.
Yeah, I'm watching that too. That's it's a little slower. I'm going to go with slower than Succession,
yes,
for sure. But definitely still very good, well-directed. All right, and with that, we're going to bring in our experts to help break down both MLL semifinals, Atlanta Blaze head coach Liam Banks and Florida Launch head coach Tom Mariano, coming at you right now. We welcome in the head coach of the Atlanta Blaze, Liam Banks, and the head coach of the Florida Launch, Tom Mariano. Gentlemen, welcome to the MLL podcast. Great to have you here. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for having
me. Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having us.
All right. So we thought it's playoff time. We want to get the best of the best analysis here. So we're going to bring in guys that have single-handedly kind of brought up plans with their staffs to play against these teams. The first matchup we're going to talk about is the Dallas Rattlers hosting the New York Lizards in the first semifinal. Coach Mariano, I'm going to start with you. What is the Rattlers' biggest strength going into this game?
I mean, I think that they have two main strengths that they've had all year, no matter what the lineup is. They play for each other, and they're tenacious. Like, they don't stop playing. I think it's three or four games, including, unfortunately, us in the last one, where they've won at the end of the game. I think that, I mean, obviously they're talented. They have great players at positions, some of the best in the league. But I think it's kind of their team bond, their chemistry, and they're just – they don't quit. You know, they just keep coming in no matter what the score is. And, you know, I think then you throw in the atmosphere at the Star, which was unbelievable. You know, I think that they're tough, especially to beat at the Star.
And Coach Banks, I'm going to flip that to you. What do you think is the Lizards' greatest strength going into the game against Dallas?
Well,
I mean, they have experience, right? So you got a lot of guys on that team who have played in a lot of big games, whether it's in college or in the World Games or just in Major League Lacrosse. So they got a lot of guys who you know, at the top level. You look at Rob Pinnell and what he's doing this season, just phenomenal, breaking his own record and, you know, a game short of what it was last year with points. And, you know, they're just old and veterans who have been around. So they know how to win, and they got a good leader in Joe Spallina. So, you know, they have that tangible within their tool belt to, you know, possibly have some success this weekend.
Now, you both faced both of these teams. Coach Mayer, I'm going to go back to you. What is one player that's going to play this weekend? Name one player and what he did against you guys that was just unguardable or unstoppable or something that you were just surprised by.
You know, I think with them, they're not a team that really surprises you. Like, you kind of know who their guys are. I mean, I think they probably have, not think, I mean, I truly believe they have the best D-MIDI unit in the league. And I'm not even saying the best rope unit, because Joel White is ridiculous how good he is. Madursky, Sexton, those guys are excellent. But the core and the way they run their four D-MIDIs is by far the best in the league. And they are so unselfish. They truly play for each other. They don't care about points, stats, ego. And to me, it's not a surprise, but you just look at it in the league where it's driven by offensive superstars and big names. You know, their D-MIDI core are the best in the league, hands down.
Coach Banks, same thing, but the Lizards.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, one thing about, you know, the Lizards is they got a guy with a magic touch. You know, Will Manny seems to show up big times in big time games. And, you know, he's kind of been always that undersized guy, right, in high school and then at UMass and with the Cannons. And somehow in the middle of the night, I think that, you know, the Lizards pulled a little, you know, Coulter leaving for Cleveland on the Cannons and stole Will Manny somehow. But that guy's a big-time player, and I think he could be an X-factor this weekend. You know, maybe owning his matchup. He's always good for, you know, one or two garbage goals, one or two on a fast break, maybe one on man-ups. But if it's close late, you got to watch him because he's kind of had that magic touch this year.
All right. These are the two, I think, most pressing questions. How would each of you prepare to stop Jordan Wolf? Coach Mariano, I'll let you go first.
Put Tucker Durkin on him?
That's a good answer.
Honestly, with Jordan, I think the key is, listen, I don't care who you put on him. I think you can't get solely kind of centered on him. Jordan Wolf's going to score points. I mean, he scored goals against Tucker Durkin, which doesn't happen very often. So he's going to score goals on you. The key is to not let him take over the game and get, you know, five hockey assists, get, you know, let him go four goals, four assists, and four hockey assists. That's a lot of points. So I think, they do a great job in a two-man game. You got to disrupt that behind with Jordan. But I think at the end, you know, he's a tough guy to stop. I just think you can't let him get crazy and kind of take over the game.
Coach Banks, same question.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Jordan, the only way to slow him down would be taking out his Achilles. But, you know, that's not an option. So, you know, with him, he's so good, right? He does everything so well. He's so fast. You know, with him and any player in this league, you got to drive him to not let him score to their strengths. Make them beat you at their non-strengths. You know, he's a righty player. So, you know, I'd say trying to drive him up a little bit to his left and make him, you know, whether it's shoot the ball and score the ball or assist the ball or hockey assist like Tommy just talked about, you know, make him do it with a non-dominant hand. And you know, they're all pro and everybody's got great stick skills, but if you can kind of slow him down for a half a second, quarter of a second, by sending him to maybe what's not their strength, hopefully it slows down and helps your defensive rotations at the end of the day and cover up. But I mean, he is he's quick as lightning. You saw him for Team USA, you see how fast he could be on that turf in the Star, and he's a winner. So he's a tough cover, who's ever on him.
All right, actually, very similar question. How do you stop Rob Pinnell? Because he's a little more multifaceted, but I think the approach is a little different. Coach Maradon, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Robbie, I mean, the way he's played, I mean, I've always been so impressed with from high school to college, how he just continues to get better. I mean, he's dominating at a superstar level in a superstar league. I think with him, it's about his rhythm, getting him out of his rhythm. You know, I think you got to shut him off at times. I think you got to slide early to him. You got to show different things, because if you come down three possessions in a row and do the same thing, he's going to get a goal, an assist, a hockey assist. You've got to get him out of his rhythm. Once he's comfortable, it's almost like game over. He's pretty much unstoppable at that point. So I think just getting into, you know, getting him out of his rhythm and forcing, like Liam said, I think the key is kind of making him uncomfortable, doing some things that he doesn't want to do.
Coach Banks, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned it earlier. Absolute props to him and the season he's having. He's a tough, tough cover. And I remember playing against him, and, you know, we thought we had it pretty contained, and then suddenly it's wham, bam, right off. Right away, he's got two or three more goals. So, you know, with him, you know, you're going to have to slide to him, and his head's always up, and you're going to have to accept the consequences of sliding, because if you don't slide to him, he is going to put a ball in the back of his goal, whether it's his backhand, which he's worked on really well, turning the corner. But, you know, you want him to throw that diagonal feed cross field. So if you can slide to him hard, roll him away from the goal, cover up adjacents, and make him throw that cross field. Now, he may throw it, he may hit it, and then somebody has to hit the shot after. But you're either going to have to slide hard to him or not let him get the ball at all. And still, even doing both those things, you could be in for a long afternoon with how great he's playing right now.
All right, I'm going to hand you guys off to my podcast partner, Chris Rosenthal, to talk about Chesapeake versus Denver.
All right, you know, Coach Banks, let's start with you. Denver Outlaws, what do you think especially dangerous?
You know, they're excellent in between the lines, and they can go on runs on you. And if you look, kind of break down where they score goals and where they score goals against us last week, you know, they got easy goals in transition. And when they score easy goals in transition, it makes it hard for teams. They did a really nice job of executing. And, you know, Eric Law, man, I don't know, Tommy, I don't know if you figure out a way to cover that guy. But, you know, it seems like he catches the ball, moves the ball, catches the ball, moves the ball, catches the ball, moves the ball, and then suddenly you get the score sheet and he has five goals. So, you know, I think shutting him down is a key to stopping their offense, shutting him down and stopping that transition.
And Coach Mariano, you're certainly familiar with the Bayhawks. What do you think's made them so successful this season?
I mean, can I add something to Liam's real quick? I don't know if there's a guy in the league who scores more with less touches than Eric Law. Like, he might touch the ball 9 times in a game.
It's amazing.
And he goes 4-4. Like, I've never seen anything like it. So I just thought I had to add that, because I agree with Liam. He, you know, they got all these middies, and then Eric Law just absolutely kills you. You know, I think going to the Bayhawks, I think that they're another team that, and they've kind of been doing different lineups and different people in and out and with injuries and other stuff, world games. I think they do a really good job of team first, of playing together, moving the ball. I think they have a couple guys in each position. And, you know, Miles Jones has had his best year as a pro. You know, there's games he's been unstoppable, unselfish. You know, Colin Heacock doesn't have the points, but if he had more points, he'd almost have to say he'd be considered for an MVP candidate, because he's played every game for them, put up good points, big goals. You know, I think they get into a rhythm on offense and they just start picking you apart. But, you know, when they're on, they're a tough out right now.
Well, let's talk about trying to stop those guys. Say you're running the Outlaws this weekend. We'll start with Coach Banks on this one. What do you tell your squad about facing Lyle Thompson, and what do you tell them about stopping Miles Jones?
Yeah, so if we're we're facing Chesapeake with Miles and Lyle. First, Miles Jones. I mean, he, as Tommy said, he's had a great year, and I think he's matured as a player. Normally in the MLL, that year two, end of year two, year three is the time when you start to mature, and he's done a really nice job there. And I think Coach Cottle's done a really nice job of bringing him along. You know, when you're trying to stop Miles, you got to stop him early. You got to get field on him. You can't let him run at you. Got to get his hand. Got to be willing to slide early and make him make a decision whether to shoot the ball or throw the ball. He is an excellent feeder, so trying to hide that slide when it's coming, but better come quick, and it's got to come to the hands, and you got to recover behind him. So I think that's one of the keys, is getting out on him, not letting him get a running start at you. And then with Lyle, it's you got to stay on his hands, you got to stay there, you can't bite the stick fakes, but you got to go to him as well. If you let him kind of sit on 5-on-5, I don't care who's defending him, he'll get his shot off. He's an incredible player to finish in a phone booth, and you got to be willing to go to him. So when you get great players, you can't let them get to their spots. So with Lyle, it's down on that right corner 5-on-5. If he gets up there, you got to go to him. And with Miles, it's not getting a running start and getting in his hands before he hits that 2-point line.
Coach Marana, same question. What do you think about covering those guys?
Covering the Bayhawks? I think Liam hit it on the head. And actually, I didn't even mention Lyle before because he hasn't played many games, and the games he has, he's been awesome. I think that you've got to make them uncomfortable. I think that's the biggest thing in this league. If you let these elite guys get really comfortable in who they are and getting down the alley and getting under and getting to the middle of the field, it's going to be a long day, and you've got to really focus on disrupting their rhythm and kind of forcing them to do things, force Miles to, kind of pull pass across his body, back up top, get the ball out of Lyle's stick quickly, like Liam said. You can't let Colin Heacock question mark and go down the list. I think for me, it's always been a rhythm thing, especially with these elite offensive guys. Once they get in a rhythm, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. Now switching it a little bit, if you're calling the shots for Chesapeake and you're trying to figure out who covers Eric Law and who covers Matt Kavanaugh, like, how do you make that decision? Like, what kind of a defender do you want on each guy? We'll start with you, Coach Mariano.
Well, I think, we hit on Eric pretty extensively. You cannot put a guy who sucks off ball on him. He's going to have a long, long day. And you can't put a short stick on him because he's people have tried that, and he just picks you apart in a two-man game and kills you. You've got to put a really cerebral guy on Eric who really understands the game. And honestly, you almost want to go to a 5v5 slide package, but just make it hard to do that because they start getting to the middle and start getting under on the low wing dodges and picking you apart. So I think with Eric, it's you got to match cerebral with cerebral. And then with Kavanaugh, you got to put somebody who can muscle him up and match his quickness. And either match his quickness or kind of physically impose your will on him.
Gotcha. Coach Banks, same question. What do you think about stopping Matt Kavanaugh?
Yeah, I think with Matt Kavanaugh, you need a guy who can cover. But I also think you need a guy with a really high level, compete level. One thing I really respect about Kavanaugh is he competes and he plays with a lot of fire and a lot of passion, and you got to have somebody who's willing to match that, somebody who's willing to talk with him a bit, go mano a mano and try and own that matchup. Having a right-handed guy on him is obviously better than having a left-handed guy on him because that sticks up field. But, Denver does do a really nice job in that two-man game with Courier up in that top area, which makes Kavanaugh a tougher cover. But, the most important thing is you got to have somebody with some fire on him who's willing to kind of step up and be an alpha along, and compete against him.
And would you say, you guys both touched on Law a little bit. Would you say he is the main priority? Like, if you have, you've got, both of your squads kind of have a top number one defender, I would say. Do you push him onto Law, or would you say reserve covering him for somebody who might be, smarter off-ball play? Coach Banks, start with you.
Yeah, I think Eric Law is one of the most valuable players in this league. Doesn't put up those numbers, but he's the most important guy to stop when you play the Denver Outlaws. So, Tommy touched on it. You need a guy who's smart, I wouldn't be surprised if he saw a bit of a shutoff this week, in and out of a shutoff. But he is the engine of that team. And but if you look at their stats, they kind of go the way that Eric goes. So he'd be my number one priority to shut off. And you know, we didn't do a great job of that last week, and that's why we're on this call right now versus headed to the playoffs. I mean, he had 5 goals on us, and you know, we could have done a better job of adjusting, and thought we did a good job covering, right? But suddenly he scores a couple in transition, a garbage goal here, and he has an effect on the game. He's a hell of a player, and it's why Denver has been to the playoffs as many years as they have.
And Coach Mariano, we'll close with you there. Do you put the number one on Law?
I mean, I think the problem with some of the number ones is they're phenomenal on ball, and they get anxious off ball, and that's the kind of crease that Eric's looking for. And you know, I think for me, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask, since they put, you know, almost over 3 touchdowns on us. We didn't really do a good job of stopping them and stopping Eric Law. But I think honestly, you've got to have a really smart guy who's not going to fall in. And Eric does such a good job of sucking you into the trap of thinking that he's covered, and all of a sudden they're midi dodges and he cuts, and he's wide open, you know. And he's not a guy, you know, some crease guys run around all the time, because he's not a crease guy. He's a perimeter cutter who just never stops moving, but he cuts at the exact right moment. And honestly, it doesn't matter where they throw it, at his feet, at his head, on his stick. He catches it, gets a shot off, and usually it goes in the cage. So, you know, Liam hit him in the head, you know. I think the key to beating him is you have to stop Eric Law. You know, their offense is deadly. But I think if you can limit him and shut him down, you're going to have a good chance of beating them.
All right, before we get you guys out of here, I'm going to ask you for the thing you probably don't want to do, which is to give me your picks for the weekend, for the semifinals. Coach Mariano, who's winning that first semifinal between Dallas and New York?
Oh, this is tough, because no matter what you answer, everybody's going to hate you. You know, I think...
Hey, welcome to my world, bro.
Yes, 100%. Remember, I'm one of the few who likes you all the time. I like what you do. So.
I don't forget.
Kyle Devitt.
I don't forget.
You know, I think I'm going to play kind of a homer, you know, considering we just played in the Star, and that place, I mean, it was the best, the most electric environment we were in, with the indoor, and, you know, they had a great comeback, and it's loud. Like, you couldn't hear yourself think, which is, I think, part of why we lost. Our guys stopped thinking at the end of the game because of the crowd. But I'm going to go with Dallas. I think the home field, I think that they are deadly at home. So I think that would be my pick, Dallas at home.
Who you got for the second semifinal?
You know, I think I'm going to kind of be a homer again. I think, you know, if this game was at Denver, I would say automatically, I think Denver wins that. You know, not many people beat them there. I think with the game being in Annapolis and the Navy, big crowd, they're going to be fired up. I don't think they're probably happy with what's been going on. You know, I'm going to go with Chesapeake, but, you know, I'm going to be a homer on this, on these picks.
Coach Banks, who you got? Game one.
All right, game one. You know, I think New York just beat Dallas. I think it's tough to beat a team a couple times in a couple weeks, and you know, kind of what my sense here is, this is John Galloway's last run. So, you know, it's just kind of the way I sense it, with his signing of a new contract and all sorts of different things, just winning gold. So, you know, I think that Dallas gets it done at home. And then, you know, I think Denver, you know, I think Bayhawks may be a better team on paper right now, but I just got a weird feeling that the Denver kind of slides in there, and you know, we'll see if Cloutier comes back for this weekend.
All right. I will throw in. I think the number is 8 or 9 in a row that New York has beaten Dallas.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's some ridiculous number like that. So, you know, Coach Foligno is going to give me crap, and I think Liam just screwed up my second pick, because, you know, like, he reminded me that Cloutier is back. Cloutier could be the factor, so I'm maybe waffling on that one.
Yeah, let's not forget that we don't know if Stephen Kelly's going to play either. So we don't know who's taking draws for Chesapeake. But hey, thank you very much, both of you, for coming on. I really appreciate it. I appreciate all the access that you guys give me throughout the season. It makes my job a little bit easier covering the league. Chris's as well. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it. And good luck this off season.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys. And hey, Cal, did John Zilberti ever give you his wall ball talk?
He did not, and he wasn't wearing Chucks. So I actually was like, is that him? I don't know if that's
him.
I
think it's time to get him on the podcast and do a little session with the Z-Man.
We'll get it in there. It's on the list.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me. And I would support a Z podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
I'll see what I can do. Thanks, fellas. All right, Coach Banks and Coach Mariano. Bigging up, right?
Yeah. Very, very nice of both of them to come on and, you know, kind of analyze these teams. And I think they brought some insight that we definitely.
I mean, we didn't bring any insight because we're going to write it for our preview, which is why we brought other people on to do it in the podcast. So sorry if we bait and switched you. You're going to have to read our previews and the accompanying videos that come with those previews this Friday before the games take place this weekend. Apologies for that bait and switch, but it's very necessary in order for people to read our stuff, which is, you know, what we want. The podcast is great, but we really want people to read what we write. And Chris, we're going to close it out. That's it. You're literally going to have to read it. We're not giving you any hints about what we think. Who's your MVP?
My MVP of the week is a kid whose name I don't even know, but I'm just going to call him the Look Maggie kid. I'm not sure if you've seen this floating around on Twitter primarily, but he's my MVP. Basically, here's the story about this Look Maggie kid. He is a very, very small toddler who has just acquired crutches, I suppose, for the first time. And so he is finally able to walk, and he is so little and so proud and so excited that he calls to his dog, Maggie, also an adorable dog, not unlike the kid. They're both adorable. And he says to the dog, he says, "Look, Maggie, I'm walking." And Maggie doesn't care because she's a dog, so she, like, walks away. But it doesn't matter. It is the cutest thing on earth right now. And with so much drama in the world today, I think if you haven't seen Look Maggie Kid, go look him up on Google or Twitter and watch this little kid who is so happy that he gets to finally walk, and he is the MVP for doing so and for bringing it to his dog's attention. And if you haven't done it yet, go do it soon before, you know, we inevitably learn more about the kid and find out that his parents are terrible or something like that, because, you know, that's always what happens with these stories. But until then, why the kid, he is the MVP, and your heart will grow 3 to 5 sizes bigger when you see him.
If only that were possible for me. Unfortunately, it's dark and cold in there. Yeah, I think for MVP, you know, I'm actually going to give MVP to someone that probably shouldn't surprise anyone if you've, you know, paid attention to my social media the last couple days, is Wesleyan head coach, Coach Reba. You know, John Reba. Dude was so gracious. I got a chance to write a couple of pieces about his team that won the Division III men's lacrosse championship this past season. You know, he hits me up out of the blue and he's like, "Hey, what's your address?" And I was like, "I mean, all right, give him my address." And he sent me this nice little note with 2 championship t-shirts. You know, like, that's like one of those things that maybe gets lost, right? If you're kind of like, "Oh, that," I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. You know, I think maybe people think that it does because we work in lacrosse and, you know, it's kind of, you know, the scratch my back scratchers. That's not how I operate in terms of, like, coaches and being kind of now a retired part of that fraternity. I can't tell you how much it meant to me just to open it up and see the note, and it's a handwritten note. You know, like, if you have the ability to do that for someone, to show appreciation for just some, like, you didn't have to do that. I didn't ask him for that. Like, no one would ask for that, but he did it anyway. You know, that's – there's good people in lacrosse. There really is, and you just got to find them, and that's why Coach Reba is my MVP, and I like to say thanks if he's listening. I really appreciate it, and, you know, I'm just glad I could write some stuff for you. You know, like a lot of stuff has come back that I've written last year and kind of not smacked me in the face, but, like, you know, been presented back to me in good and bad ways, and it's humbling that people actually read it. Because I think that it's easy for, and I think Chris can attest to this, it's easy for us to just write in a vacuum, right? Like, we write it, and we get, like, a couple of interactions on Twitter, and then it dies. Except that it doesn't die. It's always there. So it's definitely a weird thing to have to be reminded of on a consistent basis. But, you know, I am very proud of a lot of things that we do. I'm proud of this podcast. You know, I'm proud of the stuff that Chris writes as well, and that we've put together for the MLL this season, Joe Keegan as well, and everything that we do at IL to try and cover this league that is massively undercovered, guys. It just is. And if I can do anything in my power as someone that works at, you know, the top magazine in lacrosse, I'm just going to keep fighting to write and cover things that aren't mainstream. Because the MLL isn't mainstream for lacrosse fans, but we're still going to keep going. We're not going to give up. We're still going to keep writing about it. We're still going to keep going as long as the league's around. And, you know, that carries over to college for me. I'm going to start doing more D3 stuff, D2 stuff. What are you going to do? You going to stop me? Not going to stop me. We're just going to do it, you know, because that's where the roots are. So MVP, Coach Reba, thanks for reminding me of the mission, you know, to do the right thing. So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @TheKyleDevitt. Chris, where can they catch you?
Twitter at ChrisRosie22, Instagram at ChrisRosenthal.
Man, semifinals got me all emotional, man. I'm on a 10, and I'm not coming down until ML championship. It's just not happening. So get ready. We're coming at you. Check out our pieces this Friday, previewing both semifinal games. Thanks for listening. We are out.